The clerk will then send a certified return receipt letter to him with the papers in it. If he signs it, the receipt, and it comes back, he's served.
Can I do a service? Can I initiate a certified service?
I just told you that the clerk does it.
Oh.
Yeah. So the clerk does it. The problem is that most people in that situation will refuse it. Now, when he refuses it, it comes back to the clerk, undelivered. And that becomes proof that he was not yet served. Okay? And usually they do refuse it, so that's not a good technique. The final method of serving somebody is to serve the Secretary of State. I don't know if you need the court's permission for that or not, but I know the procedures allow you to actually serve the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State is supposed to know where this person is. That's your technique of last resort. You know, you're running into bureaucracy there, I'm sure. Okay. Any more questions on that? So that's all I know about service. But see, you can't avoid service. If somebody's suing you, just take the papers. All you do is delay the process, but you don't stop it.
Does that mean that we owe the state an obligation to tell them where we are at all times?
I don't think so. I think but with your Social Security number, I'm sure they can check the payroll records and such. That's another issue. Okay, well anyway, those are the methods of service. Now, so far what I have covered is the filing of lawsuits. Okay, that's the first paper that you put in. Now we have also motions. This is the other means of communicating with the court. So we need to go into that. Yeah, we've covered everything here. Court papers are letters to the court. We were here once before. But this time, let's talk about a motion. Basically, there's the six parts to a motion. Five of them are mandatory. First of all, second of all, number two, you have to make a motion. Is that large enough for everybody to read?
Yeah.
You can see it back there? No strain? Okay. So you have to have a notice of a motion. Or you have to have the motion itself. Now, motion is a real simple thing. Okay? Oftentimes, you can write a motion in one page. Because all you're saying in your motion is that you want a certain decision from the court. You might want a court order ordering somebody to stay off your property. You might want an order to stop a spouse from beating you up. You might want, let's say that you're suing somebody and you know they have assets and you don't want them to hide those assets or get rid of them before the suit's over. So you want the court to take command of the assets and preserve those assets so that you can collect later. So you make a motion to the court for the court to take over. You can make a motion for absolutely anything you can think of, okay? In my case, I'd make a motion for an order prohibiting anybody from coming into the courtroom with pink shoes. So it's anything. Yes, you have a question?
So you find the motion after you file a complaint, or does
yes,
it matter?
The complaint is what starts the process. After that, it's all motions. Well, there's also that tree structure that you go back and forth. But I'm talking about side issues, okay? For example, the pink shoes. You know, I have a personal requirement, and I'd like the court's indulgence to prohibit anybody from coming to the court with pink shoes. All right? Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to get it, but you use a motion to ask for it, okay? You might have a motion, you want to record the proceedings with your own tape recorder. So you make a motion requesting that of the court.
What if they say no?
Well, then they said no. They turned you down. Okay? But the point is that whatever you're requesting, you do it with a motion. These are the side issues. This is business between you and the court and somebody else. Whereas the other stuff is business between you and your adversary. the court's not yet involved. You're just going back and forth with your paperwork. Okay, you're having your discussion on paper. You know, you sue, he answers. You reply to the answer. That's all between you and the adversary. The judge isn't doing anything at that point.
Does that happen in front of the judge in hearings?
No, no. Nothing to do with hearings. It has to do with the fact you're suing somebody. You state your case on paper. He's served with it. He now has to answer.
Okay. We haven't even stood. We don't.
No, you're not even court yet. You just filed with the clerk. Sorry.
Oh, there's a lot of paperwork that happens before. Just
yeah,
when
you start over. You file your suit with the court.
File my suit with the court.
Right.
I get effective service.
Right. He has to answer.
He answers. And
you now reply to his answer.
That tree structure back and forth is done before anybody sees a judge.
That's right. That's paperwork going back and forth between you. You're having a discussion on paper. Okay? Accusation and defense, back and forth.
Do I see a judge necessary to see a judge for these motions? For a motion?
Not while in process, no. It's when you get to the judgment that you have to see the judge. See, this is just paper. Okay, behind you.
I'm just wanting to verify. So after you file a complaint, you have to wait for an answer first before you can file a motion? Or?
That's right. Well, you might have an emergency. You can do an emergency motion, and that's what you call it. Emergency motion for whatever it is that you're interested in. See, the thing is, don't get bound up in procedure here, all right? There is a basic procedure, which is that you're requesting something of the court, and you present that question to the court. Now, the court's not going to deal with it until they hear from the other side, so you have to give a copy to the other side so that the other side can file its answer. And then if you've got anything to say about that, you come back to the court. The way the timing works is this. You file a motion. That motion, you set a date approximately 30 days later. Okay? That's when the hearing is, 30 days later. You deliver a copy to the other side. The other side has 20 days to answer the motion. So they come back with their paper 20 days later. You now have 5 days to reply to their answer. So that brings you to 25 days. You file your answer before the 25th day. From the 25th day to the 30th day, that gives the court or the judge 5 days to look at your paperwork and study it. Okay, so on the 30th day or later, could be later, that's when you have the actual hearing, because now the judge has heard from both sides and he can make a decision for you. Or if it's your court, you make the decision. Okay?
So the motion is the document that you make a request to
yeah.
the judge or...
To the court.
To the court, but you still have to serve the...
Of course, it's no fair asking the court to make a decision when they haven't heard from the other side. How would you like somebody to go into court and make a motion and not let you know about it? Wouldn't be fair, would it? You don't know? Okay. Yeah, no, see, you have to... this is best on fair play, okay? That's what it's all about. Everybody should be informed. If you've got an issue of some kind, you've got some problem, you want the court to make some kind of a decision, you have to let the court know, but you also have to let the other side know. That's what service is about. So you serve them with a copy of what you gave to the court. They then give a copy to the court of their answer. Well, it's kind of unfair for them to make an answer and you don't know about it, so they also have to give you a copy. So they serve you.
So after the complaint, if they don't answer, so what is the time frame before you can submit your motion?
Well, you can submit your motion any time, but once you submit the motion, then the other side has 20 days to answer, and you have 5 days after that to reply to the answer. And that leaves 5 days out of the 30 days for the court to study it. So, anyway, that's the motion. So the motion is just simply a very simple statement. I want the court to say yes or no to this question, okay? Grant me this or don't grant me this. Okay? That's what the motion is. Then you have to have facts. That's your affidavit. You put together a statement of facts. What are facts? Facts are anything that you can see, hear, smell, feel, or taste. The five senses of the body. If you heard it, saw it, felt it, whatever it is that you got your facts. And the sixth item is your state of mind. Okay? What were you thinking? Only you can testify as to what you were thinking. So you can testify to what your own state of mind was. You can't do mind reading. You can't testify to what somebody else was thinking. But certainly you can say what you were thinking. So that's your affidavit. That's your facts consisting of those six items. Then you have the brief, points and authorities. Now what this brief is, this brief, basically, you state your point. I think that the court should grant an order mandating that this person temporarily give me his property. Okay? If that's what you want. That's your point being made. And then you cite the authorities. B. You say, you show the court what the law is that supports, or maybe there's case law that supports your point of view. Okay? There may be some case you found that says you're really right, you should have possession of this property while you're waiting for the final judgment. Then you have the argument in support of this point. This is where you actually connect it all together. You put it all together. Here's the facts. Here's the law. Here's how the law applies to these facts. And this is why the law dictates that you should grant me this point. Whatever it is you want. So that's all put in the brief. And believe me, briefs are not brief. Okay? But they want you, again, limited to 15 pages. That's the general rule of thumb. It can be longer if necessary, but you try to keep it under 15. Then you have to serve the other side. You're going to file it with the clerk, but you're also going to give a copy to the other side. So you get that hearing date from the clerk. The clerk, once you have that hearing date, you then serve the other side, as well as file a copy with the clerk, and as well as get your conformed copy from the clerk. That's your receipt, in a sense. The proof that you filed it. And you serve the other side. That starts the clock. From that point on, between the day that you filed it and the day of the hearing, the other side has 20 days to answer. You then have 5 days to reply to his answer. And then the court has 5 days to study it, or whatever time's left over. Okay? Now, the sixth step, an attorney may not do, but you can do if you're not an attorney, and that is that you can also have a proposed order. So what you have it all typed up. If the court says yes, the judge signs it, and you got it. Okay? So you can suggest to the court what the order should be. If you're an attorney, you may not do that. I'm not sure what the philosophy is behind that, but may have something to do with sovereignty or something, who knows. But anyway, that's how it works. So that's the structure of you know, the different papers. Now, let's look at an actual example. Here's a motion. All right, here's the notice of motion. Okay? Same format as with a complaint. Only instead, what we have is, under the case number, it says notice of motion for substitution of plaintiff. So what this litigant wants, he wants the original plaintiff died, and now this person wants to be put in place of the original plaintiff. He now wants to be the new plaintiff. And there are certain conditions where that can be done. So he's going to the court and he's saying, let me be the new plaintiff. Okay? So the first paper that we typed up was the notice of motion. And this was one of these that had a cross complaint. Okay, so we follow the double format on the left side there. But on the right side it says notice of motion for substitution of plaintiffs. This is just a notice. This is not the actual motion. It's only a notice of motion. And so the notice says, to all interested parties, please take notice in the above entitled court that on January 15, 1987 at 1 p.m. or soon thereafter as the matter may be heard in Department 430 of this court, located at 125 Civic Center Drive, Santa Ana, California, Robert Melvin Anderson will, and hereby does, move for an order substituting the plaintiff in this action. See? That's the notice. This is what we're going to do. You're letting them know. Okay? So that is the notice of the motion. Now let's look at the actual motion itself. Okay? Here's the motion. Okay? Same format. Application for substitution of plaintiff. Same form. Everything else is the same format. Robert Melvin Anderson hereby applies for an ex parte order substituting himself for Robert C. Anderson as plaintiff in the above entitled court. Melvin Anderson attached. This application is based on the declaration of Robert Melvin Anderson attached hereto and on the attached memorandum of points and authorities. Okay, remember we had that basic structure, so. So this is the actual motion. He's applying for an ex parte order substituting himself for the original plaintiff. Okay, so that is the motion, the actual motion. Just two pages. Hardly filled the second page. Alright, now we have the facts. You remember what you hear, see, feel, smell, touch? Whatever. Taste, yeah. Okay, so we'll look at the affidavit here and see what it says. Same format. Okay. And this is the declaration of... By the way, there's no difference between an affidavit and a declaration. Okay, two words for the same thing. Actually, there is a subtle difference. But in terms of going to court and all that, there's no difference. Basically, an affidavit is a testimony that's private and not made public until it's needed, whereas a declaration is made public in advance. That's the technical difference.
But an affidavit had been notarized.
Okay. Sounds like a deal to me. You can have a declaration notarized too. Sure. They're really the same. You get right down to it. Anyway, this is the declaration in support of the application for substitution of plaintiff. And notice we have a date. See? You have a date, department, and judge. Who's the judge? So, so you say what the name of the paper is, a declaration of Robert Melvin Anderson, and then you kind of explain it. It's in support of the application. Now, the other side would make a declaration in opposition to the application, see, if they were answering. All right, and this is ex parte, which means without the other party. So, we've notified, we've served the other party, but this is actually, this particular motion, when I did the research on it originally, I found that the other party, it wasn't necessary for them to be present. They had to be notified, but other than that, and they could have an opportunity to object if they chose to, but basically it was something that the court could handle without them if that's what need be. And of course, what actually happened is they just ignored it because... You know, it didn't really concern them. It's just all we're doing is changing plaintiffs, but other than that, nothing changed in the case.
So
okay.
The ex parte is the other plaintiff? That's
no, ex parte means without the other party. It's just a one single party. The other party is excluded.
But the other party is the plaintiff or the defendant?
No, the other party is actually a defendant, and one of the other parties is a cross-complainant.
Between the plaintiff and the court.
It's basically between whoever's making the motion and the court. Okay? If it's ex parte. Yes?
Communication generally. I found out, one, that there's just a lot of paperwork that goes on. But when you're communicating with the other party, does a copy of all of that communication go to the court and vice versa?
All parties...
Does all communication go also to the other party?
All parties get a copy of all papers.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, it explodes. Okay, paper companies love the legal business. It does. I mean, this case that this is drawn from, the file's this thick. Okay, it's a foot thick. So, Yeah, you just generate. You get a few defendants. You got to be careful when you file a lawsuit that you don't make too much work for yourself, because it gets expensive. Okay. All right. So, I guess, is everybody here? I guess we lost some people.
Yeah, but it's 5 o'clock.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay. All right. So, this is. So this is the declaration. Okay, I am Robert Melvin Anderson. I am the petitioner in this case. I have personal knowledge of the following facts and am competent to testify as to the truth of these facts if called as a witness. Now that's boilerplate. That goes in every declaration or every affidavit. You have that, those first few words. Then it goes on. It says, on December 25th, 1984, Robert C. Anderson, plaintiff, passed away. The certificate of death is attached as Exhibit B and is incorporated by reference as though fully stated herein. Before plaintiff passed away, he granted power of attorney to me to resolve the conflict. The power of attorney is attached as Exhibit A and is incorporated by reference as though fully stated herein. I am an heir of Robert C. Anderson. I am also executor of his estate. I have been continuously and intimately involved in this case at all times. My interests have been identical to those of Robert C. Anderson and have been likewise injured by the activities of the other parties in this case. In substance, there is no difference among the interests of Robert C. Anderson, his estate, and those of myself. I declare under penalty of perjury that the foregoing is true and correct and that this declaration was executed and so on. Okay? And it's signed and sealed. Okay? All right. So that was the affidavit or declaration of the interested party that wants to be substituted in as a new plaintiff. Okay, and this is in support of the application for substitution of plaintiff. All right, so that, let's see. Okay, so now you have the motion, you've got a notice of the motion, and you've got the facts. Okay, now we have the points and authorities. This is how a brief should be written. I want you to notice the style here. The style here, there's no explosive wording. It's very dry. You just say, here's what the facts are, here's what is, you know, you go through. You don't have big print and little print, bold and not bold, you know, none of that. You just state your case as though you were not involved. Okay. So, okay, points and authorities. Okay, same format, only now it's called points and authorities in support of the application for substitution of plaintiff. All the same caption. Okay. Now, here's the point we're making. The point is that Robert Melvin Anderson should be substituted for plaintiff Robert C. Anderson. You notice it's all capital letters. It's centered. It stands out. This is the point I'm trying to make. That's what the signer of the paper is saying. So that focuses what it is that you want out of the court. I mean, you have the basic motion. Now, here's the argument. This is where you get expressive. This is where you say what you want to say, because you're arguing your side. You're trying to convince the judge that he should do things the way you want them done. Okay? Make sense to everybody, I hope? Okay. So he says, so the first thing is the point you're trying to make. That's why it's called points and authorities. The second thing that you come to is the actual authority. You know, you have to assume the judge doesn't really know the law. It's up to you to bring him the law so that he knows what to do. Okay, if you fail to bring him the law, if he's making a decision, who knows how he make a decision, okay? So it's up to you to do your research and bring out the appropriate cases, the appropriate laws, and so forth. And even if you're the judge, you're the tribunal, you should do it as if you were trying to convince someone else. Because after all, the world is looking at what you're doing. Okay, so here's the first authority. Although this section, in permissive terms, provides that the court may allow action or proceeding to be continued by or against his representative or successor in interest, personal representative, person who has filed his suit before death, has by custom and practice absolute right to expect and demand substitution if the cause of action on which suit was commenced by decedent during his lifetime survives or continues. That was Majors versus Merced County. Okay, so that's one authority that says we can do what we want to do. The settled practice is to allow substitution of the personal representative of the plaintiff on suggestion of his death, an ex parte motion to allow the substitution. That's Campbell versus West. And the third authority, case law, says where cause of action arises out of violation of property right and not of personal right, cause of action survives death of wrongdoer. You have a Singley versus Bigelow. Okay, so there you have the authority. There's no specific law that says you can substitute the plaintiff, but there's case law which says that you can. Okay, and so this case law was brought in so the judge will know, hey, yeah, you can do this. And of course it's up to the opposition if they don't want to happen. They got to find and dig for all the laws that said you can't do it. All right, now be careful about being one-sided on your papers. In one sense, you're expected to be your own advocate. You're expected to bring out everything. But if something you come across is fairly obvious that works against your interests, you might bring that in too. Okay, because it kind of adds to your credibility when you're saying, hey, I want you to consider the whole picture. I think I net out right. You should give me what I want. Even though there's pros and cons, here's the pros, here's the cons, but here's why I think you should decide my way. That adds to your credibility to try to give somewhat of a balanced picture. But there's no question about it. You're arguing for your own side even when you do that, okay? So don't be afraid to show some credibility. I know I was in a lawsuit one time. This guy had sued me. We had an accident, and it was my fault. And I had no idea that we had a collision. I didn't even know it. Okay, but it put a little ding in his car. He had a hot sports car, basically, and he was trying to pass me just as I was changing lanes into his lane. But he wasn't there. We both changed lanes, but he was trying to pass me. Well, anyway, it's basically my fault, okay? So he sued in small claims court. And when we got the small claims court, and he told me he was mad, he was going to get an attorney. So when we got in court, he had no attorney. And I said, so I guess he was asking for, or he was ready to go to trial. And so I said to the judge, I said, Your Honor, I said, I don't want to take unfair advantage of him because I have a little more experience with court. But I said, he had informed me that he was going to get an attorney to represent his interests, and he's here without an attorney, and I was wondering if maybe he needed more time to get an attorney. Okay? And the judge looked at me incredulous. Okay? And so he turned to the guy and he said, do you want more time to get an attorney? And the guy said, no. He said, it's all right, we can continue. And the judge looked back to me and he says, you're really showing good in this court. You know, he was impressed. I mean, I lost the case, but you know, it added to my credibility. You know, so the reason, by the way, we're going through court was I needed practice. I was just learning this stuff. Yes, ma'am.
So, is it in the case that if I'm involved? Uh-huh. In the case, indirectly, can I be one of the plaintiffs, or I should file a notice?
Look, there's none of this fluffy kind of stuff. Okay. The question is, did you suffer an injury? If you did, then make the one who committed the injury pay for it. Okay, compensate you for your loss. Don't make it fuzzy sounding like you just did. Bottom line is, did you get hurt?
Well, the bottom line is no agreement evidence.
Well, all I'm saying is that you have to show you got injured. If you have no injury, you have no case. That's what it's all based on. Somebody's got to get hurt. Either you lost some rights, you lost peace of mind, that you can sue over peace of mind, although it's tougher to prove that. You know, you any way that you got hurt, you can sue about. But you got to say how you got hurt. You can't just say, oh, I wasn't happy.
Well, I'm just trying to see if I should be the plaintiff or I should file a notice of motion to substitute for my mom as the plaintiff.
You can't substitute your mom because your mom hasn't died yet.
Oh, has to be.
Yeah, see, this involves an actual death.
But not for any other reason?
No, not that I know of.
Can we create one?
Well, yeah, if she's incompetent and you're her guardian.